meeting. Honorable members, we received an apology from the honorable chairperson of the committee. The chair is not feeling well in the meeting. Therefore, in the absence of the chairperson, so in terms of the NA rules, the rule 159, it clearly indicates that in the absence of the chair, the committee must elect one of its members to be the chairperson of the meeting. So, honorable members, I'll now call upon you to nominate the acting chairperson for this session. I would like to see by show of hands, each and every member must nominate. I can see two hands. Honorable Pillay.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I wish to nominate Honorable Jane Mananiso.
Thank you very much, Honorable Pillay. Honorable Letsie.
Good morning, Anele. Good morning to all honorable members and all entities on the platform. I saw the deputy minister as well. Good morning, DM, and departmental officials. My name is Tebogo Letsie. I rise to second the name of Honorable Jane Sibuletsu-Mananiso as proposed by Honorable Billy. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Are there any further nominations? Then, if there are no further nominations, honorable members, I would like to invite Honorable Mananiso to come and lead the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Anele, and thank you, honorable members, for actually appointing me for today's meeting in the absence of the chairperson. Honorable members, we know today we're meeting with NSF and EDDP SITA, and one would want to welcome everybody on the platform, be it through those who are attending under media and those who are representing the departments, and as well yourselves, members of the House. I want to welcome you and as well welcome the Deputy Minister, noting that the Deputy Minister will be leading the delegation. And then before I go on with my opening remarks, I want to check with you in terms of the submission of apologies so that we can go through them so that I officially open this meeting. Can you take us through apologies that have been submitted, Anele?
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, we received the following apologies. The minister today is attending a cabinet committee meeting. Chair, we also received an apology from the deputy minister. Even though he's present in the meeting, the deputy minister will be leaving the meeting at 11 o'clock to attend to a doctor's appointment. Chairperson, in terms of the department's officials, the DG is currently attending a meeting with the representative from Netherlands. So that meeting he's attending representing the minister. We also receive an apology from Mr. Mvalo, who's also attending an event at TUT. So in terms of our members, Chairperson, Honorable Shikwambana and Honorable King will be joining the meeting a bit late. Thank you very much, Chair. Those are the apologies.
Okay, thank you, Anele, for the apologies. Members, these are the apologies that we have received, and I hope that they will be taken in good faith. Colleagues, we know today our meeting is all about the annual reports from two entities, National Skills Fund and EDDP SITA. We know as this portfolio committee, we have always advocated for issues of consequence management when it comes to performance and issues of recurring fruitless expenditure and irregular expenditures. And one could indicate that indeed, when we go through our presentations, we have actually seen that there are repetitive offenders in terms of the prescriptive of the PMFMA and other regularities that is subscribed by the AGSA. However, one believes that from today, members would engage in terms of forging way forward that coming next meeting or future meetings, we won't be repeating ourselves in terms of what needs to be done. I think it is in order to raise a concern that in future, all who are coming before us, they must avoid sending us late presentations because it affects us in terms of doing our oversight and accountability. I mean, we just got some presentations yesterday, and I don't think that it is fair for us as members. This is actually really badly affecting us to interrogate entities when they come before us. So please, please, I would like to call to entities that this must be the last time that we get late submissions of presentations. Colleagues, we're meeting here, noting that as we've been meeting with NSF, at times we always indicate that we are not satisfied about their performance. And we always recommend and advise them in terms of what we want them to do. However, it seems that there's no commitment by others who are in authority, or there's lack of appetite in terms of ensuring that we close small issues that create bigger problems for our communities. Like, for instance, as the portfolio committee, we have always advocated that people must adhere to the zero backlog as a concept and content that we would want to drive and ensure that we don't create problems for those who are beneficiaries in our system. But seemingly, with what we are seeing, we seek to be dealing with issues of backlog certificate every time when we deal with skills development programs. So I think we would engage them and as well make sure that whatever they commit on, we monitor it and make sure that those particular commitments are realized. As you would note that when you go through the year presentations, colleagues, you can really see that at times they commit too much and do well on program one. Yet some of us, we feel that the programs that they need to pay focus on, it's your program three, where we would want to see all targets being achieved without delays. And it is so worrying that when we deal with them, we get issues recurring and there's misconduct by others. And I think this becomes the culture of institution that they know that there is nothing that will be done to make sure that they pay for whatever they are doing. So I hope that members will be engaging with NSF and they would make them account in terms of what they have committed to do. And they must then respond on why they didn't actually execute those particular tasks. We are noting the audit outcomes in terms of these two entities on how did they do. And I think it's a concern that even if in some of the programs they did do well, however, issues of management on records, it's still recurring issues that are coming out. Issues of proper planning, they are still coming out. And we believe that people who are in authority, more especially on management, those people must be adhering to SMART principle as a basic principle tool for them to execute their task as mandated. But you can tell colleagues in terms of their presentations that they still have a long way to go in terms of making sure that there's application of SMART principle and issues of PMFMA. We cannot forever negotiate them as if people they don't know that those issues are prescriptive. Like as you go to the doctor and the doctor say, take two tablets per day. We are expecting them to do the same based on those particular prescripts. And I think from today, we need to speak on these issues of incapacitation and close the shop around them. And people who are not capable in terms of executing this task, those particular people must be redeployed where they are fit for purpose and where they are actually equal to those particular tasks. So I officially opened this meeting with I hope that all of us comrades would, colleagues, sorry, honorable members would engage fairly so and advise them on what we would want us to see in future, as we are about to be going to the ending of our term of sixth parliament, where all of us we've been encouraged to be activists. So I would hand over to the deputy minister to actually lead the delegation from NS as well, EDDP SITA, and hand over to those who support AM.
Thank you. Thank you, comrade. Thank you, Chairperson. And let me firstly extend my greetings to the honorable members, and thank you for the opportunity to for us to engage with the portfolio committee. I must firstly apologize, Chair. I'm a bit under the weather, and if I may indicate that I may have to leave the meeting just to attend to the doctor. And then I'll try and see if I can rejoin the meeting again, but I'm still here. And I think as members are aware, we have a couple of presentations today, but I just want to pick on one. I think you know that we've had challenges with the National Skills Fund. I think it has been a subject of discussions by this committee for quite some time, and I think you're also aware that based on those challenges, there was an intervention that was made by the ministry in terms of the National Skills Fund. And I think obviously some of those challenges would be visible in terms of the report that you will be getting today from the National Skills Fund, together with the I think ETDP SITA. But we're quite hopeful that particularly as it relates to the NSF, and of course both institutions, but the NSF being bigger institutions with much more responsibility and budget, and also having been the subject of discussion. But we're hoping that with some of the interventions that have been made, we will be seeing some changes moving forward. I am here with DDG Gasa, who would be leading the delegation from the department. But we really want to get into the meat of the presentations, and I think I'll allow DDG Gasa and I think DDG Mope to lead with the with all the presentation. But thank you very much. We're hoping for of course robust, but I think helpful and positive engagement from the portfolio committee. Thank you so much. If I can hand over to DDG Gasa, and then ultimately to DDG Mope to introduce the presentations. Thank you.
Thank you, DM. Before DDG Gasa, I think one would want to indicate that we would want the entities to go straight to their annual report. Those slides that speaks about mission and visions, they can just, and values, they can just pass them and just shoot straight to today's meeting briefings. Thank you. DDG Gaza, over to you, ma'am.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister, Special Advisors, fellow colleagues, thank you very much for the opportunity. With your permission, Chair, may I switch off the video?
Okay, ma'am.
Thank you. But let me proceed and thank you for the opportunity for me to table our commitments and why we are presenting in front of you, honorable members. As the Deputy Minister has indicated, the reason we are here in front of you, honorable
members,
yes.
You requested to switch off your video and I gave you a permission, so it's still on. So before, as you proceed, please note that your video is still on, yet I've given you the permission. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The reason why we are here as a DHET is to table, as the Deputy Minister has indicated, the annual reports for both the NSF and the ETDP. As the Honorable Chair has indicated, accountability measures are important for us, and why we are here is to table the annual report for the National Skills Fund and also for the ETDP. Over the years, the audit outcomes for the ETDP have been consistent, and for the purposes of today, they have not been as we are expecting. For the NSF also, they are not for how we are looking forward for them to be. And we look forward for engagements, Honorable Chair, and in tabling these results for you, Honorable Chair, let us proceed for the presentation and not waste a time. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Over to the person who's leading the entity, NSF.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Let me greet you and also greet the Deputy Minister, my colleagues from the department, my colleagues from the NSF, and also my colleagues from ETDP CETA. Chair, as you have directed, I will then proceed straight to the key elements of the report itself. I will skip all these areas that relate to policy and legislative mandates as directed by you, Honorable Chair, and the vision, mission, and all, and stay to the performance information. Chair, I will deal with this part of the performance information. And then, if Chair allows, I will then hand over to the Chief Finance Officer of the NSF to then deal with the financial.
You did well, my leader.
No, I did not. I checked it first now.
No. You did well, my leader. Switch off your mute your mic. Memakas, mute your mic, and that person who made a remark that you did well, my leader. Thank you.
Okay, let me then proceed, Chair, to say I was indicating to you that I will deal with the information, organizational performance, and then the Chief Finance Officer, Mr. Kubheka, will then deal with the financial matters, and I will also deal with human resource matters. And by the way, he will also deal with the audit action plan of this annual report cycle. Chair, upfront, I must basically, without appearing to be giving an excuse, I must upfront indicate that we are still work in progress as the NSF. As you would know, that for the last 4 years, we've been moving from, I mean, from the deep end of things, and slowly we are putting in place the necessary systems that will then comply to most of the issues that you have raised in your opening remark, Honorable Chair, issues of compliance, issues of delivery, and so forth. And also, I must also indicate to the Honorable Members that we are indeed working very closely with the Auditor General of South Africa. Probably that is the reason where we are currently, and we are receiving, I mean, full support with respect to us getting what is supposed to be received from us as the NSF. Let me then proceed, Chair, having given that background to our performance information. Our performance information, Chair, if we look at the environment, thereof it is reflected as indicated there, the total number of projects funded by the NSF in this previous cycle, the total number of skills development funded projects, those are as indicated, infrastructure projects, capacity building projects, as well as projects that are research related. And then the breakdown then thereof, Chair, is given as indicated in the slide. Proceeding to the next slide, Chair, this is the breakdown then of the learning programs that as well as the categories that we are funding as the NSF under bursaries. That is the total number in this previous cycle. Constituency-based intervention, not interventions. Interventions, I'm sorry about that, Chair. Constituency-based interventions, that is the number. TVET College interventions, that is the number. Work-based learning interventions in terms of funding, that is the number. Work-based skills programs, that is the number. The total then, it is 24,318 as indicated in the previous slide. Proceeding, Chair, to now the summary achievements in the previous cycle, 22-23, those were our achievements. The total targets that we had were 38. And then in those in which we posted over 100%, there were three. Those that we achieved fully at 100%, it was one. Those in which we partially achieved, in other words, those which were greater than 50% achievement, but were not at 100%, there were five. Those which we registered minimum achievement, we achieved greater than 30%, but less than 50%, there were nine. Those that we performed the worst, achieving less than 30%, there were 14. And those that are asterisk there at the bottom, those are the ones that were supposed to reflect in 23-24 financial years. And then proceeding to, hey, what is this? Sorry, Chair. What is this thing doing now? Okay. Now, if we look at this is the slide now, Chair, that is graphically displaying the achievements that I have just talked to in terms of those achievements, those in which we overachieved, it was 8%, fully achieved 3%, partially achieved 13%, moderately achieved 24%, is very minimum achievement, that was 37%. Now, if Chair, I take the honourable members then to the reasons for deviations, non-achievements in these of these targets. If I start with Programme 1, Chair, in Programme 1, the reasons thereof, which basically affects the entire NSF organization, the fact that we lack an integrated system is continuously impeding us in performing at our level best. And also the fact that there's still this persistent delay with respect to the filling of vacancies. That is still a challenge to us. Honorable Chair, on that part, you would know the fact that the NSF is, in terms of operational lines, it is still kind of linked to the department. For an example, our HR processes are still linked to the department. They are not independent from the department. And to some extent, that creates a serious backlog where the department has to consider the filling of vacancies, not only of theirs as the mother body, the department, but also ours as the NSF. And alone, Chair, as the NSF, we have a very huge number of vacancies. And also that tends to create a very elongated time to fill these posts. And also then that results in the, obviously, we are then limited in terms of capacity. Human resource capacity were limited. And also our ICT is also linked to the department. The problems that are experienced by the department in terms of IC platforms sometimes, which happen, they also affect us as the NSF. So the element of administration is largely linked, Chair, to the fact that we are still not just an entity of the Department of Higher Education, but we are firmly tied to the functional processes of the department, HR processes, and so forth, ICT processes. We're still linked to them. That tends to create problems for us. Looking at the deviations, the reasons thereof for Program 2, which is skills development funding, the problem is still with the skills development providers environment. Chair, I must state this upfront, honorable members. And also maybe the background to this should be given to the fact that in the past, the AG, the Auditor General, actually started to audit skills development providers directly in the last 3 to 4 years. And the skills development providers have not been audited directly by the AG since the NSF was established and taken into the department. Now, this has tended to create a very problematic environment in terms of data storage, information retrieval, reports retrieval at STP level. And as a result, this tends to affect then our performance in the sense that some of the STPs don't necessarily provide us with reports on time. Some of the documents are not available from them. However, Chair, with some of the area where we are building systems now, where we are saying NSF is not going to go anywhere if we do not improve this environment where there is easily available information when required by AG or anybody else. And also, there is full compliance in terms of the STPs or the skills development providers. And one of the issues of, mechanisms, control mechanisms that we have put in place here, it is the staggering of the payment of the allocation to them. It is staggered and it is given subject to a progressive report subjected to the NSF in terms of the implementation of the program. And also, Chair, in terms of capacity, we experience delays with respect to processing the request for proposals which come to us simply because of capacity. Also, this affects all our types of proposals, be it solicited, unsolicited, PSET ones, and so forth. And also on that STP front, some of them don't register learners on time. And as a result, the project then becomes delayed. And some of the outcomes or outputs that are supposed to be posted in the given year, they are not. And then they move to the following year. There's also a very high dropout rate, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, from the programs that we fund. We've noted that. And also, Chair, on the worker education front, RFP, because of capacity, there were delays again here, Chair, with respect to issues of evaluation and so forth. And also, that also affected the projects around constituency-based RFPs. So by and large, Chair, program two, the main blockages here, it is capacity, Chair, it is systems, and it is compliance by STPs. The AG has noted this and has advised that we pay attention to this, and we are progressively doing so. That will indicate, Chair, in our audit action plan. Proceeding, Chair, to program three, which is system improvement funding. Here, Chair, that is where also the infrastructure projects reside. And one of the challenges that we have here, it is with regards to the criminal economy and element that is involved here in disturbing some of the projects and constructions that are taking place. The example that is there, it is the one that is at False Bay, and they have involved the SAPS element here to try to protect this. And so this has an effect of making our infrastructure programs go and stop, and that affects then the transition from one year to the other. And some of these projects, Chair, they were actually completed in 2021, but because there were outstanding accounting issues with respect to the AGSA, they are still reflecting currently. And also the issue of capacity is evident here also, Chair, with respect to the monitoring and the project management of the progress of these projects. Now, at the front of research, Chair, the challenges that we came across, they are as reflected in the last bullet here, where at some point in time, the commissioned service providers, the University of Cape Town, the University of Western Cape, with respect to those areas of research, labor market intelligence, as well as the TVET research, they had to continuously postpone these simply because of some of these issues that I've indicated, the COVID-19, and they then had to change their method of research. These were supposed also to be long closed, just like the infrastructure one, but because of these delays, they are still reflected in the previous 22-23 cycle. If I proceed, Chair, yeah, that then brings me to the end of the summary, Chair, of the performance report with regards to the NSF. With your permission, Chair, I would request then to hand over to the NSF CFO, Mr. Zamagubega, to take the committee through the financial performance of the NSF in 22-23. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, sir. Over to you, Mr. Kubeka.
Thank you so much, Mr. Marcella. Good morning, honorable members, and good morning, Chairperson. I would also like to greet the Deputy Minister, also the colleagues from the Department of Higher Education and Training, as well as colleagues from NSF, as well as colleagues from ETTP CETA, and other colleagues who have joined us in the meeting. Chairperson, I've noted that in the agenda, it has been indicated that the person who is an acting CFO is Ms. Malebo. That is an error, Chairperson. My name is Zamagubega. I'm the CFO at NSF. I just want to confirm, okay, I see the slides have been shared on the other side. Okay. So, Chairperson, I would like to share the financial outcome of the NSF. So this slide, Chairperson, it just highlights some of the revenue stream that we have at NSF. The first one, which is the skills development levy. This is the main revenue stream for us as NSF. We also have the main one, which is finance income, which is derived from the PIC investment. We can move to the next slide. So in terms of the skills development levy, Chairperson, we will note that there is an increase of about 9%, where it comes from 3.8 billion to 4.1 billion. Obviously, the main reason or the main driver for this variation is because of the fact that we collect this from the employer's payroll. So the more the institution that are paying levy, the more we receive the revenue. Finance income, which is the main, in terms of the percentage variance, around 72%. Which is a main improvement on our side, is about 72% when compared to the prior year. Then when we look at the next line, which is the finance income from advanced payments to skills development, this has an increase of about 70%. But when you look at the value, which I've seen, it's not as significant as you will compare to the other revenue streams. We can move to the next slide. So here we are starting with a sorry about that, Chairperson. So here we are just analyzing the expenditure, SDF expenditure. So when we compare the two diagrams, you will note that we in the prior year we had about 4.6 billion. Compared to the current year, which is about 1.6 billion. So when you look at the main skills development funding, we see this separated into two components. The first one is a skill development funding, which is derived from program two. And then the second one is from PSET system improvement funding, which is derived from program two. So when you are analyzing in terms of the overall skills development funding, you will note that about 14% relates to PSET and about 86% relates to skills development funding. We can move to the next slide. So we also analyzed this because we found that the variance in terms of the two of the prior financial year and the current financial year is a bit of awkward. So we tried to analyze a bit further in terms of what are the drivers for this. You will note, Chairperson, it is about 74% The main reason for this, Chairperson, I'll just unpack it now. The first part, we had an NSF shortfall, which was requested towards the end of the financial year, and therefore we needed to pay NSF about 3.3 billion. This was mainly to supplement the shortfall that the NSF had on the 2021 academic year. So when you are looking at the grab principle, so if you recognize the expenditure, it is on accrual basis. So in the current financial year, we did not have that particular request. And therefore, that's the main driver for that 1.1 billion that we currently have in the current financial year. But there are some other aspects of delay of the project affecting the payments of the expenditure, Chairperson, or the disbursement. The first one, is the delays in approval of project, delays in the contracting process, project registration, and payment of initial tranches. So I think the EO did indicate the fact that we still have challenges around the vacancies that we have at NSF, and therefore it is important that we highlight that. You can move to the next slide. So in terms of the administrative cost, we are just analyzing it here. You will know that, Chairperson, we have about 100,000 that relates to employee cost, which is the main driver for this. And also we have other components, operating expenses, management fees and bank charges, as well as depreciation. If we can move to the next slide. So employee cost is about 100 million when compared to 92 million, which we had in the prior. This means there's a variance of 9%. But obviously, Chairperson, we're still having a long way in terms of filling the vacancies. I think the acting EO will speak to that at a later stage. And then we have operating expenses, which has a variance decrease of about 5%. The main decrease here is related to the NSF, the invoices that are delayed at DHET, and also the operational expenses that we incur on behalf of that DHET incur on behalf of NSF. Which are calculated based on the DHET's own spending. So therefore the claim might be lower at some extent. And then we have management fees, which has about 17%. This mainly relates to the PIC management of our investment. I will not touch on the others. I think the difference there are insignificant chapters. We can move to the next slide. So here we're just highlighting the overview of non-current assets. So the main driver here is the TVET College campus assets and other, which represent about 98%, which is an improvement from decrease from the 99%, which was in the prior year. Other components are PPAs, property, plant and equipment, as well as intangible asset. But if you look at the percentage contribution on these components, it's a really minimum. So we can move to the next one. So again, here we are just unpacking the overview of the non-current asset. As I've indicated, the main contributor is the TVET College campus asset and other. And the PP and intangible asset are very insignificant. We can go to the next slide for the explanation of variances. So in terms of the explanation of variances, if you look at the TVET College campus asset, if I can just focus on that one, this was basically due to the disposal and transfer of 9 assets. It's 4 TVET infrastructure and 5 other assets. The acting EO did highlight some of the challenges that we're experiencing with the infrastructure project, but it should be noted that it is about minus 20% Chairperson. We can move to the next slide. I'm not sure whether the person assisting with the slides can move. Okay, yeah, so Chairperson, I was speaking to this slide specifically that spoke about the about 20% in terms of the decrease in terms of TVET infrastructure. I also spoke about the challenge that we're experiencing there. We can move to the next slide. Okay. So here we are looking at the total current assets. Again, Chairperson, here the main component that affect us or that consists of the current asset relates to the investment. It is about 11 billion that sits with the PIC. Other components include trade and other receivable from exchange, trade and other receivable from non-exchange, deferred expenditure related to skills development, and the 1.5 billion that relates to cash and cash equivalent. So if you compare it to the prior chapter, the changes are similar. In the prior, you had about 90% that relates to investment. So we do not have much change in that regard. We can move to the next slide. Again, here we are just unpacking each component. As I've alluded, the main driver is around PIC investment, which we have about 11 billion compared to 10% that was in the prior year. Again, it is very important to highlight the fact that it is because of the skills development investment that once we receive, we are able to invest, if not utilized. The other components are, there's not much change in that regard. If you compare to the prior years, the difference is very minimal. We can move to the next slide. So here we are just crunching the numbers. I did highlight the first one, which is investment, which has about 17% increase. And if you note number two, which is a trade and other receivable from a non-exchange transaction, we have about minus 79%, which is a decrease. Again, here it relates to the project that has expired, payments of refunds and from unutilized funds, settlement of debtors from those STPs, as well as an increase in provision for impairment. The other components, which is deferred expenditure related to skills as well as cash equivalent, the main increase that you can note, the Honorable Chairperson, is about 132,000%, which is really not a familiar percentage. But the explanation for that, Chairperson, is the fact that towards the end of the financial year, there was a request that we needed to pay the outstanding amount to the next funds. And therefore we did all the required paperwork, but unfortunately at the end of the 31st March 2023, we are unable to make that payment. The payment relates specifically to the shortfall that we had recognized in the prior year as an expenditure. We can move to the next slide. So here, Chairperson, I won't really spend much time, but this one specifically relates to the accumulated surplus that we have accumulated as NSF from the prior financial years. So what is important is that the amount from the prior year has accumulated to about 12 billion. The main contributor is about 3.5 billion, which obviously was recognized as a surplus at the end of the financial year. I think the NSF needs to make sure that going forward, these funds are spent in terms of the project, etc. We can move to the next slide. Chairperson, in this slide, we are just analyzing the current liabilities. The main contributor is on accruals from non-exchange transaction, which represent about 2 billion. 2 billion. When you compare it to the prior year, it's almost the same. The reasons for that, Chairperson, if we can move to the next slide, it is because of the submission that they need approval at the end of the financial year. Again, the shortfall, if you think of the accounting framework GRAP, the payment, the amount awaiting payment will be included in this regard. There are issues of disbursement that needs to be paid to DHET. And also, at the end of the financial year, we had not made those payments. That is the biggest amount in this slide, Chairperson. The other movements are really insignificant. For example, if you look at the trade in other payable from exchange transaction, which is about minus 39%, these relates to the DHL claim which were not processed at the end of the financial year. And also when you look at the provisions, this one relates specifically to the reports that were not finalized by the end of quarter four. The percentage is about 118%. We can move to the next slide. So here we are just comparing, in this slide, we're comparing the revenue that we derive as NSF as compared to the administrative expenses. As you will be aware, Chairperson, that as NSF is prescribed to utilize 10% of the SDL revenue for administrative expenses. So in our case, we are actually utilizing 5% instead of the 10%. I think we are very, we are in that regard, we need to ensure that obviously with us filling the post, because this is directly related to that. If we fill the post, we might move closer to the 10% that is a requirement. However, it should be noted that in the past, due to these vacancies, we were not able to utilize the whole 10%. So when you look at if we had to utilize the 10%, we would have used about 416 million, but at this point we are using about 197 million honorable chairperson. We can move to the next slide. So in this slide, we're just analyzing the contractual commitments that we had by the end of 2022, 2023, which amounted to 765 million. But it must be noted that this specifically relates to the PSET system related project. And therefore, if we are to contract, this is the amount that we will utilize for those projects. We can move to the next slide. In this slide, Chairperson, we are just analyzing the actual and budget information relating to skills development expenditure. So when you look at what we had budgeted initially, we had budgeted about 3.6 billion. Sorry about that. But actually, we utilized 1.1 billion. It is a minus 68 variance, which is a decrease. It's a very worrying on our side. I think we have highlighted all the reasons that led to this underspending. But obviously, the entity is looking forward to implement new processes to ensure that these monies are utilized. So if you want to separate it between the two, if you can, okay, if you want to separate it between the two programs, SDF is had about 3.1 billion and PSET had about 500 million that was budgeted for. If you look at the variance, it ranges between 6-8% in terms of utilization. So it's something that is very critical that we improve and also implement processes to improve. So we can then move to the next slide. So I did highlight some of these issues that we have with relating to the skills development. I will highlight them again. I think it revolves around capacity constraints, delays in approvals, delays in the contracting process. However, it should be noted that the underspending of 68 million need to be utilized going forward. You know, if we budget again in the current year, we need to make sure that we come close to the utilization of the full amount. But it specifically relates to the pre-passing. We can move to the next slide. Specifically, this slide speaks to the employee, to the budget versus actual expenditure relating to your employee cost, but mainly it's around administrative expenses. So when you look at the variances in this regard, there isn't much movement. So when you look at employee cost is the main driver where we are still underspending about 31 million, which needs to be utilized. And also when you look at the other operating cost as well, I think they're a bit worrying, it's about 37%, but the other percentages are similar or there's not much of a variance in that regard. We can move to the next one. So these are the reasons, or these are the reasons that led to this underutilization or overutilization of administrative expenditure. Again, Chairperson, is not a good thing. Saving in employee cost is not a good, is not an ideal situation. Looking at our vacancy rate, apart from expenses, we need to utilize the amounts for that, and also the levy collection. I think, Chairperson, I will just stop here in this slide. I think some of the explanation can then be obtained on this slide, Chairperson. We can move to the next one. Okay, so I will deal with the next part of the report, which is a PFMA compliance report. Chairperson, it should be noted that in the current year, we do not have a new fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and also we do not have irregular expenditure. We were able to pay the suppliers within 30 days as required by PFMA. There was one transaction that we procured by other means, which relates to Nexus Forensic Service for the provision of the post-investigative service. Other than that, in terms of the Auditor General around compliances, they've highlighted two issues, which relates to one, material misstatements, and also the second one relating to consequence management. You can move to the next slide. Okay, I think I did touch on this one. You can move to the next. Okay, so here, Chairperson, I will be just highlighting some of the issues. I'm sure the honorable members will be aware of this, which relates to the audit outcome of the Auditor General. So, Chairperson, here, if you look at the audit report, financial statement, let's start with the financial statements. We have received a qualification again in the current year versus the back of another qualification in the prior year. But it is an improvement from the previous years where we used to receive disclaimers, I think in two consecutive years in the past. And then in terms of the performance information, we have received a qualification. It should be noted that AG in the current financial year, they've audited two programs. Program two, which was disclaimed in the past. However, in the current year, it has improved to a qualification. And program three, in the past, it was not audited. However, in the current year, we received a disclaimer. Okay. In terms of compliance, there is a bit of an improvement, even though it's not as significant. We have improved expenditure management. In the past, it was part of the compliance paragraphs in the audit report. However, in the current year, there were no findings there. So I did highlight the fact that on the financial statements, we had an issue. And then also on consequence management, we had another issue. We can move to the next slide. Okay, so just to unpack some of the what was in the audit report and some of the takeaways from the audit. So SDF expenditure, it's a qualification paragraph that it comes from the prior year. Again, HE had a limitation as well as a disagreement. A provision, it was a disagreement. We did highlight the fact that we do not have an integrated system or interface system. So basically, this emanates from our commitment schedule where we do all the qualification, and the AG did highlight some of the errors that were identified there. However, when we requested the correction, AG was not able to grant us that opportunity. If we were to address these issues, we need an integrated and interface system. But let me highlight some of the causes that have already been alluded by the acting AO. Again, the first one is around the integrated lack of integrated system, as I've alluded now. The issues of vacancies still an issue for us. For example, when you need supporting documentation, you need people to gather that information for you and submit to the AG within the required time frame. But when you look at the overall audit process, we were able to submit all the information that was required by the AG, except where they have raised the limitation. So in terms of the, as much as this is not a desired audit outcome, but there are notable improvements. One that I've not highlighted here, the relationship that we are having with the AG, it's something that needs to be noted. We are able to engage the AG at any time. We're able to deliberate with the AG on all the issues. The second issue is around the performance information, moving from the qualification, moving from the disclaimer to a qualification. And then also, that needs to be noted, we have reduced the findings from 58 in the prior to 30. But it must be noted that this 30 combined is a combination of the material findings as well as other findings. So our focus will be on the material findings so that we can then improve the outcome. So what we've done going forward, I'll speak to this later, the issue around the audit action plan. And also the action plan that we want to develop needs to be effective, efficient, and also be able to measure the performance of the entity. We can move to the next slide. Okay, maybe you can just skip quite a number of slides. Okay, maybe I can stop here, Chairperson, to allow the acting EO, then I can come a bit later with the audit action plan. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Over to you, acting EO.
Yeah, thanks very much, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Mr. Kubega. Chair, this is the breakdown now of the HR capacity of the NSF, and as we have reflected to say, we're still in the process of wanting to fill all of them. And if you look at the graphs there, Chair, there are a total number of 179 approved posts with regards to the structure that is approved. And in 22-23, the vacancy rate reduced from 73 to 48, and 131 posts were filled to date, equating a reduction of 41% from 21-22 to 27. It then becomes a reduction rate of 27%. These slides are, my apologies, Chair, these slides seem to be of difficulty in moving now. And then the recruitment rate, Chair, with respect to these vacant posts, it is as indicated, there are 48 existing vacancies at various stages in the process of recruitment, and 9 have been approved and 6 are at submission stage awaiting approval, and 33 are still being processed. Chair, this indicates the process that I have indicated earlier on to say we are not administratively processing our posts. They are then handed over to the mother body, HR, in the department for then processing. These slides, they actually indicate the processes that are taking place there in relation to our support. And then now, if we break this post down to senior management level, director post upwards, 25 senior management posts have been approved. And during 22-23, financial year, we had resignations in finance, resulting in a vacant post again coming up in the senior management levels. That's the challenge there that we are also facing in the process of filling a post. Unfortunately, we're still caught in the process where there are others who are resigning. In the previous year, that we're reporting now, we had two senior managers, directors at finance resigning. That takes us backwards, Chair, in some way. And then if we look at the vacancy rate per units now, it is as indicated in that graph. The EO office chair, the executive office chair, as you'd know that I am still an acting executive officer chair. In finance, there are 5. In skills development implementation, there are 5. And then in strategy as well as organizational performance, there are 2 posts there that are vacant. And then if we, this is then the breakdown, I mean, this is the detail now, Chair, of the information that has been given in the previous slide as to what exactly do those entail. As I have indicated, the executive officer that is still vacant, though the process now has moved to the stage where the submissions are in the department. And then you can go through, check down these posts, the stages where they are in terms of being filled. They are, as indicated, Chair, I wouldn't go through them one by one, but they are as reflected there, the stages where they are in terms of them being filled. And then, Chair, this slide then relates to the intervention measures, immediate intervention measures that were necessary in light of these capacity challenges. What we did, Chair, we requested then on a contractual basis to be allowed in the NSF to beef up our capacity. In the meantime, that posts are being filled and recruitments are being made, and we were given that permission by the minister and the DG to recruit in 99 posts. Largely, these posts, Chair, will relate at regional level, where that is where you've got serious problems in terms of the processing of projects in relation to STPs, as well as the evaluation processes and so forth, and project monitoring. So this 99 will cover that space of the regions that we have. And then in addition, we also had secondments from the department. We requested some critical staff there, and we got about 9 of them that are currently assisting at central level with respect to mitigating against the capacity shortage. And that relates then to the normal year-to-year intern that are on board now, but then that does not relate to the previous year. It simply indicates the assistance that we will have in the current year with those interns that will basically contribute also in the pace at which we then provide service delivery. And also, Chair, we are also seized with implementing the ministerial task team recommendations with respect to the NSF organizational structure. As you would know, Honorable Chair, there's a report that was out, and we are currently implementing the recommendations of that report. And some of the recommendations, they relate to the restructuring of the NSF. And as I've indicated, we are currently held by that process. And then if you look at the posts and the appointments that have been processed thus far, they are indicated in the slide, Chair. Those that appointment have been made and those in which they're still in the process. I'm not going to go through each one of them. And then this slide also relates now to the filling of the vague number of posts per unit there. The total number there that is given is 9. And also, Chair, maybe we should also indicate that there are some internal problems, obviously, Chair, that we encounter when we want to accelerate these processes as indicated there, which shouldn't be there normally, which then relates back to the issue of consequence management, as indicated, but internal consequence management with respect to lack of responsiveness internally. If one then concludes on the question of the posts, as a summary, during 22-23, 51 posts were filled, Honorable Chair, and at the close of 22-23, vacancies existed, 48 of them, In 23-24 to date, nine of these vacancies have been filled, and which we then have a 39 posts still being vacant, of which six are at the final stage of appointment, and 33 of them are still being processed. And then from 22 year to date, 60 posts have been filled within the NSF. With respect to staff movement, five staff officials existed the NSF during 22-23 due to resignations. The resignations, some of them that I have elected, two of them at senior management level. And then these others are one at contract that terminated, and the others, they got promotion, about 10 of them. And six employees were placed on precautionary suspension, Chair. Honorable members, as you would know, pending the disciplinary processes that emanated from the forensic report. And this also impacted us, Chair, to some extent, because you've got you've got senior officials that are included in this list of officials that were placed on precautionary suspensions. Though the disciplinary processes are still pending, they are not yet finalized. And then the current stage, the current stage of post, it is as indicated there, Chair. I'll just move over this slide. Members do have it. And then this relates to the further slide, the previous slide. And also this one, Chair, relates to the previous slide. Yeah, then that brings me to the end of HR matters. Noting that, Chair, in the previous engagement with the Portfolio Committee, they actually requested that we tabulate this information as we have presented it now, rather than greatly summarize it. That is why, Chair and honorable members, you see so many slides that have this information. Thanks, honorable Chair. I'll hand over then to Mr. Kubega again with your permission for him to then to take through the honorable members through the audit action plan. Mr. Kubega.
Thank you, Dr. Mabusela. Mr. Kubeka, please note that actually you have exhausted your time. So when you speak, you must go towards the end of your presentation so that we take another presentation. And please refrain from using the chat while we're still in the meeting, because these sittings are like normal parliamentary sittings, where everything would want to deal with it on the platform. So don't be dragged by Honorable Ditsi here on the chat. You would address these issues right here when you have to. Thank you.
Very quick. Most of the information has already been shared in my presentation of audit outcome. Okay. So this part, obviously, I did touch on it. We can move to the next part. We'll move to the next slide, please. Okay. Here, this is a breakdown of the audit fund. But before I go, I take you through this slide. So I want to take you through from prior year audit findings, then come to this slide. So in the prior year, no, it's fine. You can stand in this slide. Thank you so much. So in the prior year, I've highlighted that we had about 58 findings. 12 of those, in fact, 28 of those were addressed to Chairperson, and we remained with 30 items. So that represents about 52% of improvement from the prior year. So in terms of these 30 findings that we currently have, we are saying they are in progress. AG raised at least about 14 or more the same similar findings that we identified in the prior year. So the new findings were about 12 chairperson. Some of these findings they are affecting the audit report. Okay, so what we have done now, we have analyzed the current year findings in this slide. So the office of the CFO had about 10 findings. So you will note the office of the CFO will include the findings that relate directly to the financial statements and also the skills development expenditure. And also COP, it will be performance information mainly. SDI will be mainly skills development expenditure. So your legal and HRM findings were really not material. So this is the reason I'm speaking mainly on the CFO, COP, and SDI. So the 30%, both COP and CFO, they led to the qualification, or let me also include SDI, they led to the qualification in the audit report, and then COP findings led to the qualification in the performance information. We can then move to the next slide. So here we are just unpacking in terms of what was included in the audit report. So the finance unit, which is a representative of the CFO's office, as I've alluded, the qualification on the financial statements, as well as non-compliance with the legislation, both elements of material misstatements, as well as consequence management. Skill development specifically here relates to the qualification on the SDF expenditure, which was a disagreement and limitation. And COP had findings that relates to the reliability on both program 2 and program 3, as well as overstatement of achievement on program 3. The outcome of this, or the impact, was the qualification on the financial statement. So in this slide, Chaperson, we are highlighting some of the root causes. So I won't touch mainly on the first three because we spoke about them. But the last four relates me specifically to performance information and expenditure management, where inadequate project monitoring expenditure approval process were an issue, unavailability of sufficient appropriate evidence of a statement of performance information, and lack of supporting documentation for both performance information and SDF expenditure. We can move to the next slide. So in terms of for now, the action plan going forward, Jefferson, so or corrective action, just to remedy the situation, we wanted to fast track the appointment of critical position. I think Mr. Mapusela has spoken to this, appoint the project management support personnel on a contract basis, provide training to the project management teams. Also, we'd like to operationalize and capacitate the SDI quality assurance function. This one, Chairperson, is very important for the organization because the quality assurance function will ensure that whatever that is requested by the AG is verified and validated for completeness and in other assertion to ensure that the AG receive the information that is required. I spoke about the appointment of the project management consultants, and also there's an ongoing discussion with Serge Pastel, a service provider, to automate the commitment schedule. I spoke about the commitment schedule and the errors that come from there if we are using manual. We can move to the next slide. So the way forward at the moment, the action plan has been developed. The consultation has happened throughout the directorate and business unit. Finance will be monitoring and reporting. It should be noted that each unit will be having a specific person that will be assisting us in terms of ensuring that whatever that action is required on the action plan is implemented. We also have a champion that will be for each directorate to assist us. Chairperson, this has not happened in the past. We will have the internal audit providing assurance on the status and also verifying this against the supporting documentation that will be provided by each directorate. So that is how we are hoping to deal with all the issues relating to AAP, Chairperson. And thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Okay, and Dr. Marcella, I think members have taken note of the presentation by NSF, and I think we will robustly engage as we normally do and give some advices where we think that there's a need of improvement. I would just hand over to EDDP Sita for their presentation. And Tadema Busela, I would give you your time when after all these discussions so that you can perhaps do the closing remarks with regards to your NSF presentation. So hence now I'm going to EDDP Sita on the basis that I'm checking on the our time allocated for this discussion. So sorry for actually just taking over from Ntate Kubeka, because I am just afraid that we'll go overboard in terms of the time allocated for this particular meeting. I hope you would bear with me. Aseka moya umobe. I would now call Mr. D. Handel, the chairperson of EDDP CETA, to lead the delegation and take us through in terms of the briefing report on the annual report 2022-2023. Over to you, chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and good morning to Honourable members of the committee. Greetings to the Deputy Minister and departmental officials. Chairperson, it's with some mixed feelings that we come to this committee meeting here today. On the one hand, of course, we are honoured and privileged to be invited to share the annual report with the Portfolio Committee. But in truth, we also know that you only get invited to do this if you have unfavorable audit outcomes, which in this case, of course, we do have. Let me just say, as a board, certainly we take these audit outcomes very seriously. Thankfully, we've not been here for a while for that reason. And I do hope that today we're able to account for some of these and why they happen. Let me just say, thankfully, none of them relate to financial impropriety. And we have faced some of the similar challenges to the NSA around the audit process, which we'll talk to. So, Chair, I'm here with the CEO and her team, and I'll introduce her shortly. But if I may just make two comments and by way of introduction. The CETA is, of course, a large and a complicated organization. We have a turnover of more than 1 billion rand per year. And despite, of course, the audit difficulties, particularly around performance, we have provided training for a large number of workers in the sector. The difficulties, I regret, have included a wrong appointment by the board of a senior manager, the manager responsible, in fact, for delivery of programs. I'm sorry to say we've had to suspend this officials. And as a result, Chair, the CEO and her senior staff have had to pick up these responsibilities. They've certainly worked extremely hard trying to achieve a clean audit. And I just want to say from the side of the board, our appreciation for their efforts. With that, Chair, allow me to introduce Ms. Nombolelo Sesi Nkesi, the Chief Executive Officer of the ETDP CETA. She will take you through the report together with members of her team, and we will hopefully deal with some of the issues and remain open to questions afterwards. So thank you, Chairperson, and with your permission, may I invite the CEO to introduce her senior managers and present the report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Over to you, Memangasi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson of the session today, Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee that are here, the Secretariat of the Portfolio Committee, the Deputy Minister, Manamela, the Senior Management of the Department of Higher Education and Training, the NSF, Acting CEO and officials of the NSF, our chairperson, Mr. Duncan Hindle, My colleagues are here. I will just introduce my colleagues that are here. I have the acting CFO, Mr. Kawe Tsongaledzane. The CFO of the ETDB CETA is on maternity leave at this point in time, so it's not a vacant post. We also have Mr. Tommy Baloyi, who's the skills for monitoring and evaluation and reporting, and Mr. Rapotle Mabu, who is the skills planning and research. I will provide the presentation, Honorable Chairperson. I will try and focus on the issues that are very critical and pertinent for our discussion so that we can be able to conclude our presentation. The acting CFO will assist in terms of the presentation of the financial kind of section, but I will be able to take most of the presentation and ensure that we provide this report timeously and have more engagements. If you allow me, Chairperson, I will switch off the video. I needed the members to at least to see the face so that we are able to engage. I think there is a presentation on your side. If I can get a secretariat of your side to share with us. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Nesi.
Okay. Thank you very much. Chairperson, as the chairperson of the ETDP CETA, Mr. Hindle has indicated that we are meeting you, and we're meeting you for the first time, and maybe in the last kind of the current administration. Unfortunately, with an audit outcome that is not favorable that has saddened us for the first time since the inception of the ETDP CETA, it's the first time that we get a qualified opinion. And I should say that the qualified opinion is on one area, but I will talk to that. When I get to that, it is really not even pleasing to us, because we have always positioned ourselves as the CETA that has to making sure that we provide the foundations of skills development, education, and learning in the country, and assist quite a lot of our constituencies and unemployed. I will present, Chairperson, a high level of this annual report, because we are of the understanding that you do have the full report, and the report was presented to yourselves. These are the matters that are going to be pertinent to our discussion. In the presentation of the annual report, we will also add the matters that were raised by the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education, Science and Innovation, the reasons for deviations on areas of underperformance on our annual performance plan and the service level agreement, irregular and fruitless expenditure, and action plans to improve the qualification that we're having for the first time. And we dare not repeat the same. We're really making a commitment to this. The slide that is here is just providing an overall performance against the annual performance plan 22-23. We are having four programs, Chairperson. Program one is on administration, program two on skills planning and research, program three, the projects and the programs that we deliver, especially to our constituencies, to workers, and also unemployed persons. Program four is on quality assurance, and we have provided the total achievement. Out of the 35 key performance indicators or targets that we had, we could not achieve four of these. So that is a 31 out of 35, which resulted us to getting 89% of the achievement, as we strive always to getting 100% of these achievements, because we know that no one must be left behind in education and skills development. Can I get another slide? Here, this is the summary of our service level agreement. We do enter into a service level agreement with the Department of Higher Education and Training. There is a close correlation between our annual performance plan and the service level agreement with the department. And because in the service level agreement, targets are spread out into numbers. It is the same kind of the targets that we could not meet in the APP on the numbers that resulted to 79%, leaving a difference of about 10% between the SLA and our APP, Honorable Chairperson. On program one, we are having output indicators and the planned targets, the actual achievement in 22-23, the deviation, whether it is positive or negative. And I will deal with the reasons for deviations on this kind of the slide so that when I get to the other slide, I will tackle issues on how we are going to be addressing such deviations. We are looking at having a professionally qualified and capacitated staff at EDDP CETA to improve our service delivery. And we constantly and all the time do the training or provide the capacity building, because we are not doing the training actually as the CETA, but we make training possible for all our staff members and the governance structure members. Our governance structure members include the board itself as the accounting authority. We have the committees of the board, the finance committee, the audit committee, the human resource committee, the remunerations committee, the quality assurance committee, and also the ICT governance committee. We do also have the chambers that are assisting the accounting authority in ensuring that service delivery reaches everyone that is in the sector. We have an early childhood development and schooling chamber. We also have TVET and FET chamber. We have also the third one, higher education research, as well as the higher education and research chamber. Those are the chambers and the committees of the board. I just missed out the audit committee is one of our committees of the board. We have done more than what we have sourced. In terms of the staffing, we have on-the-job training. We also have career development programs for all our staff. And each year we take a certain group of beneficiaries. We are also in the process of ensuring that we are on the digital platforms. We digitize our processes, and we have been able to digitize all our performance information system now, our quality assurance processes. And I should say that we're no longer having the certificate backlogs, although we had a little bit of challenges because we deployed a new system for our quality assurance for performance information and learner management processes. And we are now in the process of integrating all our systems so that they talk to each other. That is a bigger stride that we have taken in automating our processes. And in program one, we have not had a situation of really underachievement. If I go to program two, research and skills planning. On research and skills planning, we are responsible for ensuring that we have a credible sector skills plan for our education and training and development sector. The sector skills plan gives a profile of all our constituencies, and we are having 14 constituencies. And as ETDP CETA, we are a sector that comprises more of the formal sector, your higher education institutions, technical vocational education institutions, private and public, the schooling system, private and public, the early childhood development, the adult education, training and development, community colleges. We are also having political parties. We also have trade unions as employers, independent schools as employers, schools that have appointed educators on their own. We say that those are school governing body employers. So it is a vast kind of a sector without a particular kind of the business. And hence I did indicate that our most critical aspect is to provide foundations for education, skills development, for intermediate, for higher levels, and all other skills that are critical. So what we have done in 22-23 financial year was to look at the number of occupations in high demand in our sector skills plans. We have done this when we recognized that there are always shortcomings and also challenges when we look at the supply of the skills and the demand for the skills. That gap is the gap that creates unemployment or occupational mobility that is not possible all the time. So we did that kind of a research, and we have been able to have a list now of the skills that are in high demand. We do research. We also look at the vacancy rates of the positions in the ETD sector. We also look in terms of the profiles on the supply and the demand for skills in the sector. I think we have not attached this, but in our annual report, we have attached these high skills that are in demand. We also conduct skills planning in terms of our research, and we do have research chairs that we're having for us to be able to inform practice. We have a research chair for mathematics education because we realize that mathematics has become a subject that is difficult to assist the Department of Basic Education and all other sectors that are dealing with that. We have that research chair. We have done research also on the impact of COVID-19. We did also the research that is looking into early childhood development, understanding the function shift from the Department of Social Development to the Department of Basic Education. So we do have those kind of research chair reports, and those are informing our sector skills plan. We are also looking at workplace skills plans and annual training reports that are submitted to us by all our constituencies. We evaluate this in order to understand what is the supply of the skills in our sector, what is the demand, and what is the gap. And therefore, our annual performance plans do address those gaps. And we implore on our constituencies to address also the gaps that have been identified through this research. We also conduct evaluation studies in order to look at the effectiveness and efficiency of our programs on an annual basis. And we identify critical kind of the programs for us to conduct these kinds of the studies. And these studies will inform our future kind of performance. Let's get to another slide. I do want to present all our programs, so I will rush a bit. Program 3 is on learning programs and projects. And this is a program that is focusing really on our constituencies, workers, employers, and unemployed kind of persons that we get the allocations at times from the department. With the technical vocational education institutions, we do understand that the students that are doing the national diploma, prior to obtaining their diploma, they need to have work experience of 18 months. We do take a certain number. In 2022, we supported 1,300 of this across all the 50 TVET colleges and supported them with the stipends of 3,500 each for a period of 18 months so that they can be able to access workplace experience. This is given to them in terms of a stipend, and we monitor them in terms of the placements so that they can be able to attain their qualifications. We do the same with the universities, but at universities, we are looking at BEd students that are doing practice teaching. We do this after we have done the research and realized that some of the institutions now of higher education, of higher learning, they no longer provide that support to the students and refer them to the schools. And if the practice teaching is happening over the holidays, some of the students, they are not able to reach the schools. And we also provide a stipend in this regard. We know that these targets are not that much, but we're working on those that are not getting NSFAS and those that are not having the means. So universities that we target, they identify financially needy kind of students so that they can be able to get a workplace experience. As we work on the entry of these into the workplaces, we're also mindful that they must also complete the workplace kind of the programs so that at least we account for the money, there's value for money. And we also monitor the workplace kind of sites where they are in. We have been able to attain those results, both for the internships that we had placed on the previous kind of the year. Our targets of completions are based on the intakes of the previous year, so that we can be able to follow and track those that we're placing in the programs. That's one part of the this that we've done. Can we go a little bit down? Then we are also supporting unemployed graduates to complete internship programs. We had a target of 1,227. We achieved 591. We have a deviation of 636. I should say that this is the area that is happening for the first time in this financial year that we're having, and we're taking cognizance of that. We delved deeper into the root causes of this, and we realized that working with our partners, our constituencies, it was unfortunate that they included some of the beneficiaries who did not have a matric as a graduate in turn. And in our engagement with the AG, we realized that they needed to be removed from the achievement of the target. However, they did receive the support initially. And now in terms of the completions, because we included those that do not have matric, that number had to be reduced. And what we've done now were to strengthen the monitoring requirements for the internship program with all our constituencies as the implementing agents, as the host employers, so that we don't have this kind of the anomaly. Because we do wish that all our unemployed kind of interns that graduates that were put there as unemployed, they complete their programs. Part of also of the shortfall with the internship programs. Our internship program is a period of 24 months. During the period of 24 months, we do experience those that are getting employed, they are those that are getting to be absorbed. It is unfortunate that the key performance indicators, they don't take into cognizance that if you get to be absorbed, you have to drop the internship program. And per se, these we don't consider as dropouts, although they contribute to our underperformance. They do gain employment because that is the intention of the internship program. So those are the two reasons that we looked into that. The number of unemployed learners enrolled in entrepreneurial and digital skills programs on a yearly basis, we take this group of 1,000, we make sure that they are thoroughly trained in terms of the current digital skills. We work with our institutions, private and public higher education institutions. However, in the year 22-23, we had a serious kind of challenges, and the chairperson did allude to the fact that one of the senior officials that delayed in terms of ensuring that the procurement is done had to be subjected to consequence management on some of these issues. As we understand the plight of unemployment in our country, and that we can't deny our learners when we have budgeted so the opportunity. I should say also, Chairperson, that this is not going to be a lost kind of a group, as we have planned to continue with the ones that we have not achieved in the current financial year and the next financial year, which is our last year of our current strategic plan, so that we are in a position to meet all the targets that we have set for a period of 5 years. As I indicated also earlier on, that as we put place our beneficiaries on programs, we follow up in terms of their completion status, which is important for us so that there's access, there's success, and there is also progression at the end of the day. Those are the principles that we use in ensuring that at least we see some of these achievements. We also look at early childhood development and the learnerships that were there. We have taken a smaller number in the last financial year, 22-23, given that we are looking at the qualifications now that are required by DBE compared to the qualifications that were required for level 4 DSD. So these are the matters that we were grappling with so that we don't have people that will not get employment, but they are qualified, and ensuring that there are workplaces that they are in. The next slide, this is a longer program compared to others. We also provide bursaries for the students for high and intermediate level skills required by the sector. These are the students that are not funded by NSFAS. They are financially needy, and some are coming from the middle, the missing middle kind of the group that we're having. We are awarding the bursaries and ensure that at least they register with the institutions of higher learning or TVET colleges or private FETs, if that is the case. But what we do in this case, we provide bursaries, we follow up on their results, we ensure that at least we report around that. The completion of the bursaries is not a completion after a year of funding. It's a completion after they had attained their degrees, which becomes a lot more a period, and we lose some of these through attrition, through failure rates that we had, because we continue every year to renew their bursaries. For the period 22-23, we have also underperformed on this area because at the time of reporting, we did not have applications for renewals because we provide our beneficiaries with letters of award and bursary kind of applications, and they need to reapply when they succeed for the next level of academic studies. And I should say that one of the reasons that we had here, we did partner with USAF, University of South Africa, on this. And there were delays in terms of conclusions on the receipt of the applications for the new. And we have allowed the students, whilst we have an underachievement, to register for the second year. To register for the second year, although at the time of reporting, we did not have these numbers. They have now come in, and we have pledged that they will be paid for their fees. This is also a mitigation strategy that our students, that we know that they are financially needy, they don't lose the kind of the support. We also support people with disabilities on skills programs. And I should say that with the unemployed persons, we do provide a stipend, we provide training, we also provide some gadgets in the form of laptops or iPads that are necessary for that, so that they can be able to have these tools of trade at the end of the day, inclusive of the persons with disabilities. As well as the students, we do provide them with a laptop, we provide them with the fees, we provide them with the meals that are necessary as part of the package of what we support for the unemployed persons and the students. The next slide, please. Thank you. We, as I've indicated, that EDDP-CETA is constituency-based. We work with all our constituencies. As we do not provide the training, ours is to make sure that we identify the gaps in terms of the skills, as we are having a sector skills plan. We communicate and engage our stakeholders and look also at their annual performance plans and work on this. We have we are partnering with DBE, all provincial departments, and the Department of Basic Education nationally. Behind this number 10, I should say, Honorable Chairperson, There is a big number of teachers that have been trained. There is a huge number of district officials that they have been trained. Here we're just highlighting the partnerships. And there's also a number of interns that have been taken to support also the Presidential Education Youth Employment Initiative. So there's quite a number of projects within the projects that we are having in place. If we could be given a chance, or we have to provide the committee with further information, this can be provided to see behind these numbers. There's a lot of support that is provided. Also, our workers from constituent employers enrolled in skills programs, I have indicated that we support our constituencies for skills programs, for bursaries, and any other programs that they deem necessary as per the workplace skills plans that we analyzed each and every year. These are the targets that we have met for our constituencies. We do have political parties that are paying the levies to the CETA, universities, private HEIs, early childhood development, the departments of education that I have mentioned in terms of that, and also the libraries and archives. So all of those that are in our constituencies, we engage them and support the workers that are there so that they can be able to execute their mandates as levy payers in the ETDP CETA. Can I get another one? Another slide? That is another slide. Thank you very much. As I've indicated also, the 26 universities are paying their levies to the CETA, and behind the 26 partnerships we have established, there's quite a number of skills programs that are taking place or for the lecturers, for the workers in public HEIs and private HEIs, and we have been able to ensure that we render the services that they need in order to improve. As we also know that most of the lecturers are graying, we encourage new entrants into the higher education space. And one of the major programs that we're working with higher education institutions is to ensure that there is a training and retraining of the lecturers so that they can be also keeping abreast with the developments that are taking place, including the fourth industrial revolution. On TVET partnerships, we have programs and projects that are taking place in all of the TVET colleges on these 50 partnerships. Most of the lecturers that are in the TVET colleges have qualification challenges, and it is our kind of a critical position to ensure that at least all the TVET college lecturers, they do have the minimum qualification of technical vocational education, which we worked together with the Department of Higher Education in the establishment of that qualification, but also adding to other critical skills. For 10 TVET colleges, we have the fourth industrial revolution centers of excellence, where we're trying to improve the digital space of the TVET colleges and making sure that they are catching up with times. There's also a training of the principals in the last also financial year. We have placed about 20 of the TVET lecturers into PhDs so that they can do research within the TVET space so that nobody else from outside is doing that. And then we're creating a critical mass of expertise within the TVET colleges. With the community education and training colleges, we are supporting them on the use of the digital learning platforms. We do know the challenges of the 4IR, the challenges of infrastructure, and with the assistance of ensuring that there is a use of digital learning platforms, CET colleges are not going to be struggling to have infrastructure problems so that learning can take place. And I think that because of the COVID and the impact study that we have done, we felt that putting the 4IR, 5IR digital kind of strategies in place, even in our constituencies, will go a long way in ensuring that we have sustainable education and skills in the country, especially in our sector. We have also providing the, we're also providing the support for community-based organizations, non-governmental organizations, non-profit organizations with training interventions, those at in our sector. Each and every year, we identify the critical NGOs, NPOs that are working with our communities, that are working with our schools, that are working in the sector, and those that are making an impact, and we support to build their capacity so that they continue doing the good work that they are doing out there. However, I should say that through some kind of an oversight on our part, one of those NGOs we identified, because we need to have proof that this is a registered NGO, was a private company registration. And then we had to remove that one from the target. And we have not yet replaced the other one. So we will be in a position to that. That is the reason why we could not get the entire target that we planned at the time. We continue supporting the unemployed persons through our program on cooperatives. Our cooperatives, on a yearly basis, we take a group of 10 cooperatives. Previously, we took a huge number. But within a cooperative, we know that there are other 5 members or more that we are training on basic skills of entrepreneurial kind of development. This training will go a long way to supporting them in terms of them being self-employed or employing other people. Our plan is to ensure that after they have been trained as the basic in the basic kind of the skills, business administration, financial administration, marketing, then we will place them into relevant kind of the sectors for them to acquire more skills and provide them with the support for a period of 12 months so that they can be able to sustain their own kind of developments. The other one is a worker-initiated training program that we support. As we know that within our space, there's quite a lot of workers, trade unions, labor. They initiate their own kind of the programs. And as part of the HRDC strategy, we also thought that let us include some of the themes of the HRDC and put the worker-initiated training program. And the ETDP Center has been providing support in administration to worker-initiated education, worker education programs. We identified 3 programs. We identified 3 of those. And on a yearly basis, we support worker-initiated training programs so that we are not the ones that are initiating this, because we know that workers are coming at different levels of education and they need a variety of the skills, and we do that. Lastly, we are also supporting career development in the sector. We used to have career development events that are many, but now we decided that to professionalize the career development space, and after the training, they get a qualification on information practitioners, career development officers, so that they can be able to assist the communities on what best careers. Because if we're not looking at the career development, the mismatch of the skills continues, the gap between the supply and the demand. And these are placed at the TVET colleges where we use that in anticipation that they will go to the schools, they will go to the communities and be able to look at the current and the future kind of the skills and advise communities and learners at schools in terms of the new careers. I think that is what we are having on program 3. It's quite a lot of the programs there. The last one is on quality assurance. On quality assurance, as we're looking into the issues of accreditation, program evaluation, but also we're looking at the supply and the demand. And then we initiated the development of the new qualifications in these high demands. so that we can be able to address the skill shortages in critical kind of areas. We are also looking at the recognition of prior learning, and we have focused on early childhood development and community development so far in anticipation that we can expand. These are the ECD practitioners that have been in some of the crèches. They never had the qualification, or community development workers, they never had a qualification. And through this RPL program, which is accelerating the attainment of the qualifications, we were able to afford them the qualification in addition to the prior learning that they had. So it assisted quite a lot of practitioners in this regard. And then we also follow up on the completions of those. The challenge that we are having also on RPL is that the program has to be tailor-made for each and every individual. But through the dedicated effort and the assistance of the TVET colleges, we have been able to get more of this. That is basically our programs at Jefferson on the four, as per the APP of 22-23. I've tried just to rush quickly. I will allow my colleague, if you also allow me, the acting CFO, to quickly take you to financials. You will see that I have not included issues of governance. I have not included the issues of human resources in that. One thing that in terms of our governance, the committee could attest, we are having a fully fledged governance body, accounting authority, responsible and accountable. DHET could attest to that in terms of the charter, governance charter that we're having. Also on our staffing issues, we have offices in all nine provinces. We are taking the service to the people, and we are working very closely with the communities where we are. So I didn't get into much of that, those areas, because I think performance and accounting financially were critical. Although the issues of governance, the issues of staffing are equally important, but for the sake of time, I didn't dwell on those ones. But if there is any question around that, I will be in a position to respond, Jefferson. The acting CFO will take us to the revenue collection and also some of the pertinent issues around our finances. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, ma'am. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Jefferson and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. Deputy Minister, member, colleagues from DHET and colleagues from NSF. I will be taking you through the annual financial statements for the ETDP CETA for the year ended 2022-23. As the CETA, we have sort of three revenue streams. The first one will be the SDL revenue, which we collected 690 million. The second one is the departmental revenue, where we receive revenue from provincial departments of education, where we collected 370 million. And from our interest income with the funds that are in the Reserve Bank, we collected 89 million. And there's other insignificant amount of 269,000, that is other revenue. And total increase in our revenue for the 22-23 was 9% overall. Can move to the next slide. This slide is just showing the revenue in a tabular format so that members can easily understand our revenue. We can move to the next slide. So I have basically explained what is sitting in this slide, in the first slide, but just to elaborate further, it's that from the 690 million that we received from our employers, this is coming from 4,120 employers in the ETD sector, and all the nine departments of education did pay their levies, also DHET and DBE. And on the interest income, where we generated 89 million, we were generating this at an average interest rate of 6.04% in the 22-23 financial year. We will move to expenditure management. On expenditure management, where the total expenditure of 920 million in the 22-23, which is split as follows: 210 million was in administration to run the administration of the CETA, 569 million was in discretionary grant, and 139 million was in mandatory grants. We can move to the next slide. At the next slide as well, it's a graph showing the expenditure for the two financial years. We can move to the next slide. In the next slide here, we're just showing that a mandatory grants to the value of 131 million was paid out in cash to a total of 960 qualifying employers. These are employers who submitted WSPs and their ATRs, and they did pay levies to the ATDP seat. We can then move to the next slide. The next slide is just breaking down the revenue, I mean the discretionary grant expenditure, where we have 112 million spent in bursaries, 76 million paid in stipends to interns, 27 million paid to private higher education, 123 million paid to TVET partnerships. This also includes the WPEs internships, 190 million paid to skills programs for both employed and unemployed, and 39 million paid to our stakeholders in terms of training of their employees. We can move to the next slide. This is just a pie chart showing where our expenditure is going. We can move to the next slide. The next slide, this is our statement of financial position. This is just a summary of our statement of financial position. Our total asset at the end of 22-23, we're sitting at 1.6 billion in our total assets. Our liabilities were 325 million, and our net asset was 1.3 billion. In our liabilities, we have liabilities for discretionary grants and also a small portion for mandatory grants, but majority of our liabilities are project-related liabilities. We can move to the next slide. The next slide just shows our commitments at the end of the 22-23 financial year. We had a total commitment value of 1.1 billion at the end of the 22-23 financial year. Which is split as follows: approved and contracted contracts, we had 938 million. Approved but not yet contracted, we're sitting at 259 million. We can move to the next slide. Okay, I will then hand over back to the CEO, who will then take us through the reasons for the deviations on the APP and the SLA. Thank you.
Thank you very much to my colleague, Mr. Ngaletsane. I did indicate the deviations. I will not repeat them. They have been highlighted in red as I emphasized on them, on the four programs that we could not achieve in the current or in the 2022-23 and the commitment that we have made. Can I get to another slide? Okay, these are the strategies that we have put to overcome the areas of underperformance. In terms of the completions, as I had indicated that we had some of those that did not have the metric, and unfortunately our constituencies did place them. They got to be a part of our reporting, and then later on we had to remove that. And we could not have started afresh because we had already provided the training. At this point in time, we had put standard operating procedures that we have communicated to everyone and a proper kind of intensifying on that monitoring. It's just a question of we had our interns would be graduates. And in the explanation of our reporting terms and conditions, a graduate must have at least metric. And because of the high rate of unemployment, the ETDP CETA is including those that have passed metric, regardless of the pass rate, but are unable to find employment. And the AG accepted the term graduate for matriculants. Unfortunately, any grade 9 to 11 was never considered as a graduate. And that's where we had to strengthen our standard operating procedures. And even in the letters of awards, we now were emphasizing that matter with the proper kind of monitoring, as we have indicated. The second aspect where we are overcoming these areas is the issue. Can we go to the second one? I've dealt with one. Thank you very much. On the unemployed learners, it's just unfortunate. It's the terminology at times that we put them as these unemployed learners, but our beneficiaries that are unemployed, when they get into our programs, they become the learners. The terms of reference now have been put in place. I have put some kind of strict monitoring into that. And we are going to be doubling the number now in terms of the number that we should have attained in the last financial year and the current. And the next time the committee would need to get a report next year, at least would have done justice in terms of that those that we recruited would not lose the opportunity. On the renewals of the bursaries, the challenge that we had at some stage, because the sitters were in a position of each stage renewal, maybe sitters are not continuing in terms of the administrative kind of procedures of the minister. We were very cautious in terms of giving a four-year B.Ed contract and would say to the students, please make sure that by January, you also submit a request for renewal. Now we would like to assure our learners that if they get our bursary first time, they will be getting that support on condition that they pass all the subjects, because we really do not pay for those that have failed their studies. So we have committed also to continue to renew this bursary so that no one is at an institution and collecting a debt that is not. We also continue to supporting historical debts of the students when we do have some of the surpluses of the funds. So it will be something that we can be able to achieve and manage and monitor it so that there is no recurrence in future. The other aspect would be on the, can I get up? So the last one, yes. This is the area where I just indicated that there was an oversight in the documentation verification from our monitoring processes. And now we have, for the past, since we had the audit kind of the findings, engagements with our constituencies, engagements with the end users, so that we make sure that our documentation is compliant with our standard operating procedures and that. And any kind of contrary to this and violation of these policies, consequence management will be implemented. So these are the areas that we have committed to ensuring that they do get to be implemented, even if it's after the period of reporting. There are instances of fruitless and wasteful expenditure that they have been raised. We had issues of the interest that were raised and the penalties that are there. In terms of the amount of money, which is 243,312, we are still under the process of investigating, because when we look into the PFMA, there should be a determination that we need to look into that. So we'll be able to provide a report so that we can be able to deal with this. We did have issues with SARS, late payments that we had, and action to be taken after the investigations. On the issue where we had staffing on accommodation and no shows, we have gone to the process of ensuring that all those staff members, because this did not happen in the current kind of the financial year. It was, I think, in previous years that were there. Now we have a situation where all of the staff have paid the amount of money. We gave letters to the staff members that have defaulted for whatever reason of no show. Secondly, we have been able to get the money back. So that money has been put back into the coffers of the staff. Same thing in terms of, that one was on flight changes, where we have been able to do that. We have one instance, if you see the amount of loss recovered, it's zero on the, my apology, on the 1,530. That one is one of our constituent member that has been trying to dispute the matter, but we are investigating. But on our staffing, because they are on our payroll, we have been able to recover all the losses and sent a communique that these issues should not happen in the future. The other aspect was on the 35,000 where service renders were above, the purchase order, PO is for the purchase order. We are going to look at that amount of money. We are not looking at it as a small amount. 35,000 is quite a lot of money. We are doing the investigations and the determinations around that. At the time of reporting, we have not been able to establish that. And I think that's when the AG said that they could not establish the consequence management. But I need to assure the committee that we do take consequence management seriously on transgressions. The irregular expenditure, we have two items of irregular expenditure, which is different from fruitless and wasteful kind of expenditure. We have the accounting authority members who were appointed, as you know, that these are appointed by the Department of Higher Education and Training. At the time of appointment, there were delays in the vetting process in terms of the criminal records from the police and all of those. However, on the 1st of April 2020, they had to resume with their appointments. This is the matter that we had engaged the Department of Higher Education and Training. It affected almost all sitters, and our board did look at into the matter, and it was approved and condoned because DHET and the National Treasury engaged on this matter. And now the appointment of the board members has been regularized. We should be saying that it's irregular because at the time of appointment, some of these key kind of issues were not completed. However, there were no financial losses as the services were rendered by all board members. And they were talking about three board members since 2020. Payments made on expired contracts, it's 505,000. We had a service provider, legal service provider that was working with us. And unfortunately, one of the officials could not honor the contractual obligations and extend or put an addendum on the contracts when it got expired while services were being rendered. We did take a consequence management on this matter when the said staff member got to have allowed the contract to expire. And at this point in time, the staff member is no longer in the employ of the EDDPC, but on the charges that we had, including others, this matter was part of that, that no contract must lapse under the watch of any official responsible for such. So this was one area, but also on this one, we did not experience the financial losses in our determination as services were rendered. That's where we are on the irregular expenditure. Then we do have an audit implementation plan. We have a finding, I think the acting CFO will talk on this much, but this is one area. But if you read the entire report, our financial statements did present fairly accurate and correct kind of statements and compliant, except on this matter on the completeness of expenditure, which we had at some point raised a disagreement with the Auditor General. However, we decided to let it go because our views with the AG officials that were with us were different on the matter. Let me allow this acting CFO to talk to this matter, but it's a matter that we are taking cognizance of, and it did take us by surprise when it happened.
Thank you, CEO. And thank you, Chairperson. On this issue, our qualification basis from the on the 2023 financial year was on completeness of discretionary grant expenditure. And the reason for this was because our we did not have a central invoice repository in the organization, and invoices were coming to our project managers in all 9 provinces, and all the other project managers who are running programs in the organization. So there were invoices which were in dispute between the service providers and the CETA in terms of the amount that the invoices were, that that the service providers were claiming. So those amounts were not, those invoices were not catered for in the 22-23 financial year. And these were picked up by the AG when they were doing the completeness testing. And due to the timing of the finding that it was raised, as the CETA, we are not in a position to be able to make the necessary corrections in order for us to at least get qualified with findings in terms of the audit opinion. But however, from after the audit, we have since then designed a central repository system in place. We have also implemented a form that an invoice must not come to the CETA without that form being signed by the project manager and the service provider, indicating that indeed the service rendered are the ones that the service rendered indicate the indicates the invoice amount that the service provider is in its invoicing. And this, and what we are also doing is that on a monthly basis, we are monitoring this process to ensure that the action plan that we have, it's effective enough to ensure that in the 23-24 financial year, we don't get a qualification on the same issue. And we will also be having our internal auditors looking at this process in the third quarter to ensure that the process is watertight, and we are not sitting in this meeting next year accounting for a qualification. Thank you.
That's where we are, Honorable Chairperson. With our presentation, we'll be able to take questions from the members. Thank you very much for affording us the opportunity.